Hey guys, one thing before the episode begins. We're going to just throw a quick plug for our seasonal correspondent Amelia's new streetwear brand, Lewd Drip.
I love it!
She has a cool selection of hentai-inspired apparel that makes you look clean while giving you that kawaii-ass sheen.
I love it!
You can even get yourself some cool peeker stickers of a SisCon show and last year's Ren-a-Waifu anime, and even some Genshin Impact stickers if you're into that.
I love it!
You can get all of that and more by going to the website lewddrip.com. That's LEWDDRIIP. So, like with two I's.
I love it!
And if you use coupon code OTAMEL with your purchase of $50 or more at checkout, then nothing will happen because there is no area to put a coupon code. But hey, it's fun to pretend.
I love it!
So go check that out right now, or maybe later, or just whenever you think about that, and let's talk some non-lewd anime.
I love it!
The Otaku Melancholy Podcast. The podcast that changed for the better after this film. My name is Matt, and I mean, man, I don't even know, dude. I had it written down what I wanted to say, but it seems so cringy. I'm Matt. Hey guys, what's up? I'm Matt.
And I'm Brad, and I'm not going to reveal my true name because I'm still indentured to the podcast.
And you will be indentured until the day you fucking perish from this earth.
Hopefully soon.
I don't know about that, dude. You cost too much to let die. Anyways, it is the second week of Miyazaki month, and since we are kind of going in sequential order, we skipped a few works to get here, but we are covering in this episode his most widely and best? Question mark? Actually, you know what? I'm taking away that question mark. Exclamation point, best. I have not seen all of his works, but I feel like this is the best.
I mean, it's definitely up there. We are talking about Spirited Away, the 2001 work, directed by, of course, Hayao Miyazaki.
And, Spirited Away.
Or as it's known in Japanese, Sen to Chihiro no Kamakakushi.
Are just Sen and Chiharo Spirited Away.
Yeah. And as some background, we went into this film thinking that, yeah, Spirited Away is good, but I think it's a little overhyped. I don't think it's that great. I don't think it's even that the best Miyazaki film or the best Ghibli film that we started up. It's like, holy shit, how could we be so wrong?
Yeah, I am a widely known practitioner of the, yeah, Ghibli's just overhyped. You guys just haven't seen real anime. But I was sitting here just blown, just like, I had to lean my chair back because I couldn't lean, I was leaning too far forward into the computer screen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Spirited Away, guys. I mean, this is actually, our viewing was my first time ever seeing it. Like, not in a sense of that I saw it when I was younger or a long time ago and forgot about it. I legitimately have never seen the film before.
Which is wild and was fantastic to hear his first time reactions. This is my second time watching, and I had the watched it was not when I was younger and forgot a lot of it. So I knew a lot of the key points and was just waiting there, waiting for mass reaction whenever things happened.
Yeah, And I definitely reacted because I am so, I guess if I think I said something about this in the loop in the third episode, but I am very underexperienced with Ghibli films. I've only seen like three of them. And I didn't even know that Yababa was from this this movie. I thought she was from Howl's Moving Castle.
I mean, she does look like a big ballooned version of the old lady from Howl's Moving Castle.
Yeah, but I legitimately had no clue. I have no just sense of where these characters come from. So it was just wild because I was like, hey, it's the suits from other Ghibli film. Wait, it's from this one. And then I thought to myself, is every single Ghibli piece of merchandise I've ever seen come from this movie?
Yeah.
Because my ex had a Haku jacket with a, like, that had a bunch of, you know, Haku's, you know, spirit jacket for him all over it, and I was just like, ha, cool jacket, is your name Haku? Got him. And then it, you know, it was a jacket with this character on it, and that's astounding. Now I appreciate it more.
Yeah, this film is definitely the cornerstone of Ghibli, of Miyazaki, of anime watching in general. I mean, there's a reason why it's so hyped to the point where you think it's overhyped. It's because it's that good and it's that fun.
Mm-hmm. Most definitely agreed. I presumed it to be overhyped, and other people who were fans of it were just fans because they didn't know how to form a proper personality and select good anime. Mm-hmm. But then while watching it, I legitimately was just, I was just caught up in the actual film so much that the 2 hours went away and I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
It's gone. And as I said, after we finished the movie, I said, I'm going to Target later, going to go pick up the Blu-ray. You want anything?
That's really the measure of how you know that something's good, when after finishing it, Matt just sits in silence and just looks up show Steelbook or Blu-ray or Collector's Edition.
Yeah, I've done it several times on the pod.
Yeah.
I've ordered things after we finished them. So I got it. I feel like there's so much, like, it's not like there's a lot of time has passed between viewing it or anything, but I feel like the recency bias will last with me for at least a month.
Yeah.
I feel like we're going to be watching seasonals. I'm going to say, yeah, this is good, but this isn't like Spirited Away good. So I feel like I'm going to be gushing, and I'm really sorry if that becomes just annoying for people who can't find the enjoyment of the film. I get it. I do actually get it on sort of finishing this movie. I can see why people might not enjoy it, you know, thematically, if you're not a big fan of sort of Eastern culture and sort of a just understanding and diving into sort of an Eastern sort of a spiritualism, then you're not going to get much out of it.
Because this is very heavy into the East Asian mysticism and folklore.
Mm-hmm. It really leans on that sort of supernatural element, and I guess that can be off-putting if you're not particularly entranced by some of it. It's not like they're yokai, but it feels like they're very much in the same kin.
Yeah, but it's not like it bashes you over the head with explanations or lore dumps or anything like that. Like, that character is this, he's known for that, and his special ability is blah blah blah. It's just like, that's the river spirit. That's no face. It's the stink spirit. And you can gather just from the events that you see and from the name River Spirit, like in the bathhouse scene, you can gather that, oh, he's been polluted because the river is being polluted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the moment that, like, Haru was revealed to be a river spirit as well. I was like, oh, that makes so much sense. Why there's so many, there was bicycles and like garbage in him, and then he turned out to be that dragon.
Yeah.
Because in the moment I was just, oh, well, that was kind of cool. That was really visually stunning. And then after, you know, the reveal of Haru.
Haku.
Haku. Why do I call him Haru? Haku, I said, wow. It makes sense now. But for the uninitiated, what is a short little summary of this movie, Brad?
Okay. So Chihiro is a young girl, a 10-year-old girl who is being moved to a new town for some reason or another. Maybe the parents found a new job. but she's going to be going to a new school with a new friend she'll have to make, and she's just kind of lamenting the whole experience. Mm-hmm. On the way to the house, her dad takes a off-road and goes down a tree tunnel and gets to a old Japanese building with a small stone statue in front of it, and decide to walk through the tunnel, a very creepy tunnel with wind howling through. On the other side, they find a wide landscape of an old riverbed. They go into an old town with many shops and delectable treats laid out, seemingly abandoned, though. The parents sit down and eat, Chihiro goes to explore, and she finds herself in this otherworldly location with spirits and other characters, and she finds herself trapped while her parents are transformed into pigs. So she finds she has to work for an old witch in the bathhouse in order to earn her freedom. And she comes across a myriad of wild and whimsical friends that help her through.
I mean, yeah, that's definitely it. That's a good summary. I really like this film.
I really like it too.
It is, to note, one of the only foreign animated film to ever have acquired an Oscar. It's also, there's some other sort of things it's received that are just one of a kind. It's constantly voted on top 100, you know, best films. I think it's on a lot of people's top 50 films you have to see before you die and such. And yeah, it's good.
Yeah, it was the highest grossing film in Japanese history with a total of 30.4 billion yen from Japanese box office alone.
Until Mugen Train said none of that.
Yeah, at the time. And also had $289 million worldwide. Like you said, earned an Oscar for Best Animated Feature in 2003. Won a Golden Bear at the 2002 Berlin International Film Festival. It's among the top 10 in the British Film Institute's list of 50 films you should see by the age of 14, as you said earlier.
Oh, I didn't say that. Yeah. I just know that I was looking up acclaims and there was, you know, a list of 50 films you need to see before you die. And that was on there, and so was Castle in the Sky.
Yeah, you were close enough.
Okay, cool. Awesome. I did it, Dad.
I'm proud of you, son.
I did it. So, let's just start off with how visually stunning this movie is in every single inch. When we were watching this film, as you know, it kind of transitions with, you know, Chihiro just exploring this sort of bathhouse and seeing different things that make it operate. And when she goes and encounters the Kamaji, who operates the heat and water for the bathhouse.
Yeah.
There's that iconic scene where all the suit sprites are taking the coal, you know, into the flames. And at one point, I was just, because I'm that kind of nitpicky asshole, I watched one of the suit sprites come out of the hole with a piece of coal and watched him all the way to the end. And he bobbed and weaved in between these other suit sprites. And I was astounded.
Yeah.
Because I thought, you know, maybe it would be lazy. Any other person would probably have just grouped them up so tightly so they didn't have to animate, you know, just little things moving in a straight, you know, like in a complicated pathway. But no, during that scene alone, these sprites, while they're not moving like in intricate fashions, they're still moving in a coordinated unit that says that each one of these sprites is trying, you know, to go forward and not run into the other one. And that's amazing. That's an easy cop-out anyone could have done to just group them up like that and to just group them up in a massive bundle so they didn't have to animate every single one individually.
Yeah, most other productions would have a suit sprite have its trail go on, and then each other suit sprite would be that same trail, just delayed a little bit to give the illusion of group movement.
Or they would have just done it off screen.
Yeah, but this one, each suit sprite has its own path and is animated as an individual working around other individuals, like a group, like a flock of birds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really, just as someone who, I don't consider myself an animation, you know, like an aficionado in it, to where if just a tiny little animation is off, I get, you know, upset. But it is one of those things, like, you can tell when there's beautiful animation and when there's bad animation. Mm-hmm. And it's not just in that scene of, you know, the herdman, you know, the suit sprite herd. It also kind of pertains to that scene with all the little, you know, little birds.
Yeah.
Little paper birds. They all move in a sort of collected individual unit. And that's really cool as well. If I had any sort of just example of how hand-drawn animation can really just excel leagues above digital, it would have to be this. But I understand, again, that that's a mastercraft sort of work. So I'm going to struggle at this point to just not, you know, compare this over and over and say, yeah, this animation's good. But is it Kamaji operating every single part of his job good?
Yeah.
Which is going to be hard.
It's really going to be hard to talk about this movie without just gushing on the visuals. But, So, what can we talk about?
Well, I mean, the visuals are very important. Mm-hmm. I think if you had taken this movie and you had maybe flattened it out to be something for TV, you know, because it easily, 2 hours, I felt like I went on a journey. I felt the same sort of completion as watching a 12-episode series, because we went on a journey, and the animation really helps with that in the smallest scenes, just having that that little meal piece of animation that another show might not have, or another movie might just not do. It really makes it just stand out even more, you know? Yeah. So I don't think gushing about it's bad. I think it's just what you should do. The little pieces of gold falling onto the ground out of No Name's. Oh, fuck No Name, by the way.
No face,
whatever.
And it does well to sell, like, the style and the weight of certain events and characters, like the stink spirit, the way he was moving in. You could see sludge, like, starting from the top and going all the way to the bottom, and that being the quote-unquote foot as he makes this next step, and as well as the ooze, like, popping out and then flowing out. And when he actually gets into the bathhouse, the way Chihiro has to wade around in that, and how she leaves an imprint that stays in there for a good few seconds. It sells the consistency and the ooziness of this sludge.
Ooze.
That you were just disgusted by.
It was gross. The sludge was moving in tandem with the shifts of the body. It looked like feces, dude.
It looked worse than feces. And even, you could even see the stink lines when the sludge monster breathed.
Yeah, and everybody was reacting to it in just such a just visceral way. Everybody was, like, recoiling from this guy. And the sludge, it all... I have never watched an anime that affected all of my senses, but I could kind of smell just the stink off the stink spirit.
They also did the subtitles very well to reflect that. They were, like, talking through their teeth, "This way to your bathhouse, please."
Yeah. Gosh, I feel like I had some... I feel like coming off of Lupin, the Castle of Cagliostro, which is very much Miyazaki's first work, and then skipping all those years to this one when he has a more comprehensive knowledge of what he's doing, you can just see on display the work he's putting in.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was... Just that sludge, that grossness. We praised it in the Castle of Cagliostro, but the set designs, the bathhouse, and the area surrounding it are so lavishly detailed.
You can feel it's a real location and you can imagine yourself being there.
Mm-hmm. Some signs are more faded than others on the shopkeep area.
Yeah.
There's, and even in the background, there are big plates of fried rice and dumplings that don't, that aren't relevant to what's happening in the foreground. It's legitimately almost as if somebody made a model of this town or of this bathhouse and everything and said, this is where this is. This is where this is. This is how this is going. They legitimately had to have done something like that because it's so cohesive in a lot of ways. And just another sort of just gush for this visual design is the crossing of the bridge scene where all these spirits are moving, you know, around Chihiro. And you feel the tension mm-hmm. because you feel packed in as she's struggling to breathe. It's this movie good.
And not only the visuals, but the entire building of all of this mysticism in this world. It's engaging because you're wondering, like, what does this mean? What does that mean? What else does this imply? Like, small little notes, such as Chihiro crossing the bridge and being told, hold your breath while we cross the bridge and they won't see you. Like, what is the background of this as a, like, what Japanese fairy tale and whatnot, fairy tale and stories are built on this whole crossing a bridge without breathing. Like, all these spirits have some kind of background to them that is just subtly dropped, and it makes your brain spark with wonder.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I was just in awe with the visuals alone. There could be no sort of story that really kept me engaged. Mm. And admittedly, maybe the story is a little bit weaker because it is such a sort of thin little thing. Oh, I got to turn my parents back to normal. But I think just working in tandem with the visuals really propels this to something to where it is fun to watch. You don't have to have a deep plot as long as you're doing fun things along the way from your stagnant point A to point B.
Yeah, and really, this story is not one that has a solid destination, but it's more on the journey because this story kind of ends at the status quo. Like, parents go in, parents come out, and sure, maybe some time has passed, but it's all about the journey and seeing the growth that Chihiro has going from a young, naive, stubborn child to someone who knows how to, like, deal with the problems that come into her life and, you know, can make new friends. She made friends with No Face. She made friends with Baby and Bird.
Baby was creepy.
Baby was big.
Yeah, I was like, damn, Baby thick. And then I was like, oh, scary.
Yeah. A lot of things that just seem innocent turn out to be really scary. And like the riverboat scene with the jovial music in the background, which the music we will get to in a minute. And all these spirits coming out like they're going on a vacation resort to the bathhouse. And it's like, yay, all the guests are arriving. But we see Chihiro's face is just horrified and like astounded at whatever's going on and how she is in this crazy wonderland, and we're confused, like, am I supposed to be happy or scared?
I mean, I definitely feel like the music works along with these visuals to tell you what you're supposed to feel.
It sets the mood in such an astonishing way. And the music by itself is so good.
Mm-hmm.
Who is it that worked on this music?
Joe Hisaishi. Or Mamoru Fujisawa.
What else have they
worked on this dude?
Um, Well, he also did the work for Ni No Kuni, Princess Mononoke,
Porco Rosso, Kiki's Delivery Service.
Got some really good work on music. He also did Howl's Moving Castle, My Neighbor Totoro, Nausicaa.
According to Wikipedia, many have compared the team of Hayao Miyazaki and Joe Hisaishi to the collaborations of Steven Spielberg and John Williams.
I can see that.
Yeah, I definitely feel it. I definitely feel like, you know, looking at those two, John Williams and Steven Spielberg, you definitely do feel like they really complement each other with their sort of sprawling scores that are in all their movies, and definitely the same way with this film. I feel like, you know, music is one of those things that when it's okay, you don't really notice anything about it. But when it's bad, you know, you can really, it's hard to ignore. But when it's great, it's something that works so well in just what you're viewing that you are aware of it as you're watching. So it becomes a full sort of body experience.
Yeah. It's music that lingers in your mind after, and it's something that can play in your head and remind you about the scene that you saw it in.
Oh, yeah. I definitely feel like there are pieces from this film that, while I've literally only experienced it once, I feel like after I see it once again, I will know where they came from and they'll be in my mind. And then I'll just have that sort of leitmotif ingrained into my very spirit, which is pretty cool.
Very cool.
So, what was your favorite scene of the movie?
Oof. From raw visual perspective, I would say it's the river spirit scene in the bathhouse. Seeing Chihiro take charge to try to get this river spirit clean. And then everyone coming together, even Yubaba coming together to get this quote-unquote thorn out of him. And the teamwork to get all of this pollution out of him. And seeing that pollution come out. And then when it finally gets that last pop, hearing him go, and just the kind of, I can't help but use the word mysticism and mystical, but seeing the river spirit's face come out says, well done, and then rewarding Chihiro with this humble gift and flakes of gold everywhere and everyone going wild and the river spirit bursting out of the doors. Just all of that working so well. But thematically, my favorite scene is when Chihiro's riding on the train with No Face, and it's this very quaint and quiet and almost melancholic tone to it, and they finally get to Zeniba's house, and when she gets that blessed hair tie and saying, this will keep you safe. It was made by the string spun by your friends, and that just kind of pierced my heart a little bit. It's that very sweet type of magic that I really like that has no explanation, but it's just the spirit and good feelings from the people who care about you that can protect you.
Oh, I definitely feel that. I think my favorite scene is the bathhouse scene as well, just because of that sort of the tension that's in it. Of her trying to get through all this drudge. Like, I was in visceral, just, I was in actual shock as she was moving through that sludge, and I was really wanting her to get it. And when she dropped, and I love the little details, like when she drops the first ticket, or the first thing to send off, and then she picks up another one, and it's still kind of awkward, but you can see she's gripping a tiny bit harder. I liked that. I really liked that entire scene. But I'm also a really like big face. Wow, I'm just awful with names today. No Face. This chase through the bathhouse.
Yeah.
Mostly because of that one scene where Baba pulls a Rasengan and then he just vomits on her.
No.
And she's just stuck in it. I really like that because some of the visuals in that really got me too. It's just the liquid feel of No Face, the vomit he's pushing out. And it's really stunning. And the tension in it is really... It's really engaging.
The real creep fest that is No Face from the first time you see him is unnerving. I know it was unnerving for you.
Yeah, my first time going through this, I was not okay, especially with his little moans. But a lot of the little noises the characters made in this, the yo.
Yeah, the three green ogre heads or whatever, Oni.
Yeah, yeah.
No explanation for them. They're just there.
Yeah, they're just there. I mean, I'm sure that if we were more familiar with some Shintoism or Buddhism, we might understand the representations better. But me, I'm just like, hee hee, funny green head.
Yeah.
Or hee hee, hee hee, little suit sprites get crushed by rock. Giggle, giggle.
Oh, yeah, when Jihiro rescued that one suit sprite and carried the coal for it, and all the other ones are like, hey, lift mine, do my work for me.
Yeah. Yeah, the suit sprite, being in the boiler room, that was also really fun. I really enjoyed the boiler room scene. I enjoyed that character's designs, and I just enjoyed him doing all those little things with his hands. You don't know what he... Well, I didn't know what he was doing at the time. I didn't know why he was operating on everything. And then when it tied back in, he was crushing medicinal... He was crushing herbs and all that to change the bathwater. I was like, oh, that's so cool. It ties in so neatly.
And it's just small details that really tie this movie in. Like when he bashes the hammer, the little wooden hammer on the stone to get the suzetitian. Mm-hmm. And the chopsticks in his rice bowl just kind of fall out.
Oh, I didn't even see that.
Yeah, it's little. That's the thing. It's something you don't notice on the first or second or third time. But on the fourth time, you notice it. And it's a new experience each time you watch it because you notice new details.
I mean, I definitely feel like when I rewatch this film, because I'm going to rewatch it, I will be able to see those little details.
Yeah,
and appreciate them more. Because as it stands, there was a lot of things to take in. There was always something there to look at. And you can't focus on everything all at once, especially when you're, you know, when you're reading the subs.
Yeah.
Which, good on these. I've heard about the dub, the Walt Disney dub. I've heard that it's pretty okay and that they basically... they wrote the script around the mouth flaps so that it would look more visually like it would work better as a movie, which I think is what these films do, actually, for Ghibli films in particular. They record the dialogue first and they animate the talking around it.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, the reverse of what normally happens. They produce the animation first and then there's recording. So unless there's pivotal scenes where it's essential that kind of works in tandem, but just the way they talk, it looks like it just looks so fluid. So I can imagine working on this as a dub and then saying you have to hold out that syllable so it works perfectly for that mouth flap. what sort of is lost in translation when you're doing that sort of method, you know?
Yeah. And plus when you have some some dub producers who take this, especially back in that day, they're probably not looking for the artistic integrity. They're looking to get this massively popular piece from overseas and try to get it over into the States. And they want to make as much profit as possible, so it's little cost into dubbing, so they can recoup more profit. So who knows what they're changing in the dub?
Yeah. I mean, and I get it too. This is one of these, the Walt Disney Company actually financed some of this movie to have just first rights to it.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of surprised I didn't see it when it came out. I know it was on Toonami. That's what somebody told me that it was on Toonami at some point.
I cannot remember how I saw it the first time. Maybe it was Toonami.
I think somebody told me it was on Toonami, but I'm not exactly familiar. I'm sure that somebody will tell me that it was on Toonami. But to my knowledge, I just knew of this film because it's Ghibli. And you see the merch for these suit sprites and all that everywhere. And surprisingly, I'm out of No-Face stuff, which is just haunting to me because he scared me.
Yeah, he's
so much
scary, but he's iconic.
Fear is a cornerstone of American entertainment, or just entertainment in general. Sorry.
Yeah.
I just cannot believe that it. I thought the character would be a happy go. You know, it'd be happy, be a fun little character. But every time he was on screen, if he went, I said, get away, go away.
He's always creeping on the other side of a door or in a corner. He's like, stop.
Yeah, I was trying, before I was taking this film really seriously, I was doing the whole, hey, you a gamer girl? You like Minecraft? Every time he was on scene. Hey, can I get some of that bath water? Ugh, Quinchy. Could I get some feet pics? I got Bitcoin.
Doesn't help that as he got more disheveled, his hair, he grew some hair and it was very unkempt.
Yeah. I just don't like the fact he was like, hey Chihiro, here's some gold. Take some gold. I just want to give you some gold. And I was just dumbfounded. But I think,
you heard it here first, Miyazaki predicted simps.
Miyazaki's yeah, but going back to No Face, he's an interesting character. I think there's a lot of themes in this film, and I'm trying not to go to the Wikipedia page and take the themes away from it. Because then I'll be like, yes, this is what this movie means. And then you'll be like, oh, he's so smart. But then you'll go onto Wikipedia and be like, oh, this motherfucker just can read.
Or I'll do something like, really? How'd you find that? And it'll be like, you mean you don't know?
You didn't come to the same conclusion?
No, help me find it.
One of the themes I think is really prevalent in this movie is not just environmentalism, you know, because it's about river spirits and the nature of that, but I think it's a very anti-consumerism.
Yeah.
Or just I don't want to say anti-capitalism because I feel like there's a lot of mixture in that, but from the very first scene you see of Chihiro's parents, you know, they become pigs.
Yeah.
They gorge themselves. And you see the dad's in that tight-ass polo. He's driving an Audi. The family is loaded. They've got used shopping bags around them of what I'm assuming are big-name brands.
Yeah.
And then they go into this world and just indulge themselves with no stopping. In fact, the dad even says at one point, yeah, I got cash and credit. And it's just so, he's flaunting this wealth and he can just take whatever he wants. And he does, and I mean, it's even in the little workers, they're so hungry for this gold that No Name is dishing out.
Yeah.
That they, you know, just will do whatever. And you can even see it in Baba, you know, the rest of the entire bathhouse looks very Japanese, you know? Looks very old and Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
And then Baba's room looks very Western. There's a lot of jewels and things on the ground. The baby's room looks like it came straight out of Castle of Cagliostro. But everything's just decadent in her area, the operator of this bathhouse, and unlike the other areas. And so I really think this movie, just while I was watching it, I was like, man, Miyazaki hates consumerism.
Yeah. And it definitely shows that when there's the journey to Zeniba. And it's a very quaint, but very cottage core house. Like, it's not cottage core, it's Ghibli core, as you said.
Yeah, Ghibli core.
And it's a nice cottage house that I would want to live in. Got a nice wood, like, brick stove.
Yeah, she's sewing her own clothes in there. Damn.
But
damn,
it's a very simple life, and it has a lot of peaceful tone to it. And you can tell Miyazaki is wanting to put attention to that and celebrate that, as opposed to the wild chaos and noise of the bathhouse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the themes of this movie, he really does sort of not lay it on thick. I don't think the anti-consumerist message would be really heavy-handed or heavy-fisted.
Yeah.
If you just weren't looking for it, you know, you just wanted to take in this film, you wouldn't see it. But as just some of the emotions that were going on through the film, especially No Name just gorging himself on this food and living, you know, in sort of a hedonist sort of life. Hedonist.
Yeah, you got it. Hedonistic.
Yeah, see, I read a lot. I don't hear a lot. Just engaging in this hedonistic lifestyle where he takes in what's going around him. His personality becomes his wealth, you know?
Yeah.
And because when you first see him, he's just a guy. He's just, And then he gets this lavish pleasure, and then it turns him into a monster. And he takes the identity of a sort of just person who's allowing his wealth, you know, dominate in his personality.
A big tipper.
Yeah, big tipper.
And you can see him in the background after the river spirit leaves, and there's a lot of gold flakes in the ground. Everyone's going wild for it and just celebrating the river spirit. And you see No Face in the background hold out a hand saying, what if I could do this? And you realize later that he made all this gold out of sand. It is just, it's fool's gold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's worthless. And I think, you know, when it transforms, everybody's really upset.
Mm-hmm.
And again, very anti-consumerism. And that's, I mean, for a person who watched this movie and said, I'm going to go use money to get this movie, I'm kind of missing the point.
I'm going to get the most expensive, biggest steelbook collector's edition I can get.
And I'm going to put it on my shelf with other DVD objects that I can look at and say, ha 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 ha, this fills the void quite properly.
I love opulence.
I need material goods. Why? Because the world tells me I do. But the anti-consumerism message is just there, and I like that.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
And it's not overt, too, like some of Miyazaki's other films with the environmentalist message is a bit heavy-handed, like
Totoro
and Princess Mononoke and Nausicaa. Like, all right, I get it. Industrialism bad. Pollution bad. Nature good.
Yeah, I mean, he kind of leans on that, especially when it's, you had a name, but they built apartments on you. You're right.
Yeah.
I've been ruined.
And it's not a bad stance to have. I mean, the environment is important. And when you, like, illustrate the beauty of it, it can fill you with a sense of longing for that environment. Like, I wish I could one day have a secluded cottage just where I could, you know, spin my own designer clothes and have a whole set of bee boxes out there and get my own honey. Help the bees, you know?
I want my bee. Brad's like, I got my own bee box. And then when he opens his bee box, it's just me going.
And I close it like, damn, that's some sweet honey.
He looks at the camera. I said bee box, not beatbox.
Wah, 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 wah.
he's like, you get one Seinfeld theme usage per month. You're gonna use it on that one? Confirm action.
And I think he also had the environmentalist message in House Moving Castle too. And Ponyo's all about the ocean, so you know it's gotta be in that.
I haven't seen House Moving Castle, so I'm gonna agree with you.
And yeah, pretty much all of these are about the environment. Nausicaa, Castle in the Sky, Totoro. Care to see if it's in Kiki's Delivery Service?
I have seen Kiki's Delivery Service. I don't think that one is as environmental message motivated as much as it's about the nature of growing up and being a teenager.
Yeah.
I think that's more of what that's about than anything. And that's another theme in this movie that maybe I'm grasping on this one, but I think this movie is really targeted as far as like the age group. 10 years old is a really specific age, you know?
Yeah, that's when you're starting to actually come into your own.
Yeah, you're still a kid, but you're not quite a kid who is constantly needing to be supervised, but you're not at that teenage level where things are expected of you.
Yeah.
So I think that's I think that's nice too. I know that in interviews Miyazaki has said before that sometimes he has made his movies for certain audiences. He made Kiki specifically for a teenage girl audience, which is kind of interesting that Miyazaki's just like flipping through like latest hot boy magazine going, yes, I know what the kids want. I'm gonna give him stripy shirt.
Yeah.
Or Totoro is really childish. You know, those are all the characters are really young kids, and that has that, you know, that very much anti be nice to the environment message.
Yeah.
Man. I wonder if the Wind Rises has got an environmental message, or is it just all planes? He just said, fuck it. Planes!
I'm really excited for that one. Mm-hmm. I like planes.
Yeah, I'm excited for that one too. That'll be the last Miyazaki film of this month.
Yeah, unless he comes out with How Do You Live between now and then, and we'll be like, well, shit, that's his latest. We gotta do that one.
Yeah, I'll be like, well, you got me, Miyazaki.
We'll just be at the theater. Otaku Melancholy, live at the premiere of How Do You Live.
Just sitting there. They didn't like us bringing in our own snacks, but they were okay with the laptop and the microphones.
Miyazaki did a big nasty and released this on Tuesday when this episode is supposed to air.
So we are just going to talk about the themes as we're going on. Shh, you shut up. Anyways, I think that so far at the start of the film, there's a lot of the title cards are here, Brad. What do you think about the title card?
I think they're beautifully animated.
All right, cool. I see some prick trying to do a reach around on the girl in 2 hours ahead of him. She's clearly not India, dude.
You gotta build up. You gotta wait for the after the climax of the film to do that.
Fun fact, did you know that the main character of The Wind Rises in the Japanese dub is voiced by Hideki Anno?
Really?
I can't believe it either.
So that's what he was doing instead of doing Evangelion 3.0.
Apparently so. That's just wild. Who could I get to be my main character? Hideki Anno just crying in the corner. That man.
Just like Miyazaki's going down to the anime god lunch room, and he sees Hideki Anno just like drawing storyboards of crosses and whatnot. And he says, hey, Hideki, you want to be a voice actor for my next movie? And he's like, excuse me?
I said, do you want to be in my movie? Well, I'm not doing anything right now. Meanwhile, people, when is Evangelion 3.0 gonna plus 1.0 coming out? Yeah, not doing anything great.
Hey, you busy? Nah.
Oh, whenever Whenever the fourth Evangelion Rebuild movie comes out, we got to do that one too.
Oh shit, I guess I'll need to watch Rebuilds then.
They're okay.
Yeah. I don't know. I like the original more, having not seen the Rebuilds.
Listen, dude, we got to pump out this content. And part of pumping out this content means whenever something new and hot comes out, we cover it.
Yeah.
That one time that we didn't cover Mugen Train.
Yeah, that's because I couldn't get to a theater.
Well, you also haven't seen the original anime.
That too.
You would have just been sitting there going, man, there's a lot happening here. It's cool. Damn, they get powered up by breathing? Holy shit. Anyways, enough tangentials. So, yeah, and other characters that I really like were Baby Mouse.
Yeah, and Bird Bug.
Yeah, Bird Bug. Also enjoyed Bird Bug. Also a big fan of, going through the cast listing, big fan of, that's it. Chihiro herself is so harmless, but I feel a lot of her spirit.
Yeah.
But I don't think I like her. She looks kind of like I said when we first saw this film, before I knew the greatness that was before me, I said, she got a Rugrat face.
They all got tiny noses, except Yubaba and Zeniba,
who are all nose. Gosh, the detail on their wrinkles was uncomfortable. I felt myself aging.
Yeah.
But in the nature of Chiharu as a character, I think I like her strength of character to just stand there and just say, hey, I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
In the face of scary things.
Yeah, props to her for the first time she met Yubaba, and Yubaba's dealing with the rowdy baby, and she's saying, I want to work here. I'll deal with you later. I want to work here. I'll deal with you later. I want to work here. Fine.
Whatever.
I know I would have been like, if Yubaba said, go, I'll deal with you later. I said, okay. And tried, like, be on her good side and think, if I'm compliant, then she'll like me and then she'll do something for me. Oh.
Yeah, that's me too. I'll just... What's that line from The Simpsons? When she sees how you'll do anything she asks, she's bound to respect you.
But Chihiro is all like, I see you're in quite a predicament. I'm going to demand something from you until you lose your patience.
One mild complaint that I do kind of have is I'm not the biggest fan of Chihiro's and Haku's relationship.
Yeah.
I do like that it isn't that forced romanticism. It isn't that they like end up together. There's just this deep spiritual caring that they have for each other. I like that. Yeah. But how attached she is to Haku, I'm not the biggest fan of. But I guess if I was thrown into just the middle of the suburbs or the middle of like, I don't know, Russia, if somebody helped me, I would cling to them too. So I guess I can kind of get that.
Plus they do hint at their history with each other that Chihiro can't remember. So there's this spiritual familiarity that she has with Haku, with the that Haku has with her. Like Haku can remember her name, even though she never said it. So it's like, I know you, but I don't know where I know you, but you feel familiar. So I'm going to trust you.
Yeah, that's true too. I forgot about that completely in retrospect. Yeah.
And it's not like they had any kind of romantic interest, even though, Kamaji was saying, it's love.
Yeah, but there's different types of love.
Yeah, there's different types of love.
You can have someone of the opposite sex in your life and, you know, like, not be your mom or dad. To not be your mom or grandmom and still have a deep affection and love for them.
Yeah.
That transcends them being beyond just you know, what they represent. They can just be someone you really cherish and they mean a whole lot to you, but that doesn't mean you have to, like, fuck them.
Yeah. There's more than just romantic love. There's even more than just platonic love.
Yeah. You can have, you should popularize platonic romantic love.
Yeah.
Popularize romantic platonic love. I don't care. Popularize it all. Love is love.
If you wanna learn something, look up the four types of love that the Greeks had. They had the empathy bond, friend bond, romantic love, and unconditional god love.
That's the kind of love I'm aiming for. Unconditional god love. Let me look that up real quick.
It's called agape. It's the kind of
agape.
It's sort of the devotional love that you would have for
a deity. That's the kind of love I want. But I didn't like their relationship as much. But I am glad that it's the kind of relationship that it is. It does seem to be that kind of relationship that we see a lot in Japanese anime cinema when it's a big movie, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's that, you've profoundly changed my life. Thank you. And as I said, when we were watching this movie, I was like, ah, to be a guy in a Ghibli film and profoundly change some girl's life by doing nothing.
It's like that meme. You've profoundly changed my life. I literally just gave you a rice ball.
Well, I mean, it's like your name. It was, hey, we really care about each other, but we never do anything.
Mm-hmm.
Or a silent voice. Hey, we really care about each other, but we're never doing anything. Kiki's Livery Service, same thing. I like it. I like it a lot.
Yeah.
And in this movie, too, it's all over the place. Hey, you have made a big impact on me. I will never forget you. Goodbye.
It's just like silent voice. Like, you've changed my life, and I care much about you. And she's like, you've literally bullied me my entire childhood.
All that I can do when I look at you is think of all the times I hated myself. Ah, interesting.
Or like another movie of that type I'm not going to give because it's kind of a spoiler, but you've changed my life. I'm literally dead right now. Or Weathering With You, you've changed my life. It's raining. Can we go?
You profoundly changed my life. Meanwhile, people in the background watching. You were supposed to get your dick wet, not all of Tokyo. But I guess I didn't think about the connection they have of Haku saving her and all that. Damn, Ghibli, this is a good ass film.
Yeah, how much of a good ass film is it?
Are we reviewing it now?
Unless we have something else to talk about.
Go watch the movie.
Go watch the movie.
Go get yourself the Steelbook Edition. It's at Target for $21.99. I know, mine's on the way.
Fucking get a VPN or pirate it. Do whatever you have to do to watch it. Commit crimes to watch this film. It's worth it.
Yes, you will be in jail, but you will be profoundly changed.
Sneak the MP4 up your ass while you're sent to prison, and then you can play it for all your prison buddies. So like, watch this anime, foo! And then you become the prison boss. That's how it works.
I have provided them Studio Ghibli films, and they respect me. I'm the baddest bitch on the yard. They're like, what else you got hiding up your asshole, Brad? Today's film is gonna be a classic. I had Porco Rosso up my asshole. But if we're doing final thoughts and reviews, okay, I'll go. This movie good, 10 out of 10.
Woo.
But legitimately, anime is all about animation. It's literally in the title. And when you see something that's a masterclass sort of hand-drawn animated work with a story that is layered in itself that warrants multiple rewatchings just to pick out little things that can be in the environments and all the details that come with it. I think as I was watching this film, there was like an hour where Brad and I didn't talk.
Yeah.
We were just watching the movie. And Brad and I are those two dudes who think they're funny when they're not. So you know that that's a lot for us not to say something like, but we didn't because we were both sucked into the film and I was soaking in the details. I legitimately, my phone rang 3 times and I just looked at it and I said, you'll have to wait. I hope you're not dying. And I really enjoyed the film. I think if I had to recommend a movie, like if I had to put an anime movie for people to have to see, I don't think my favorite film would be that. A Silent Voice is still my favorite anime film of all time. But I think that if I wanted to give them something that would actually affect them, that would be the kind of cinematic experience that would say, hey, anime is something worth watching, even if it's just these films, I would do Spirited Away. Now, I haven't seen Howl's Moving Castle. I haven't seen a lot of those films. Mm-hmm. So I'm making this blind... this blind statement, and I'm basically, if Howl's Moving Castle is even better the next week, then I'll be like, well, you know what? Fuck what past Matt said. This one's better.
You're writing a check without looking at your bank account.
Yeah. We finish Howl's Moving Castle, and I'm like, time to go back to Target.com. He just swimming through the Studio Ghibli steelbooks to get to my to my bed. But this film, on my first watch, it, you know, I was really stunned. I was floored visually, thematically, story, characters, everything just blew me back. And maybe I'm just a sucker for if your show looks good enough, I'll love you. I feel like that might be the case in some regards. But no, this movie's good.
Mm-hmm.
This movie's great. This movie's amazing. This is a 10 out of 10 piece of work. I can say that wholeheartedly. I finished it. I said, recency bias, Matt. But then my brain said, this ain't recency bias, Matt. This is love. And so I gave it a 10 out of 10. And I stand fast to my 10 out of 10. It's not no Tokyo Godfathers 10 out of 10 where I said, maybe it's a 10 out of 10. No. This is, for me at least, a 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
And that's my piece.
There is a reason why Spirited Away is so acclaimed by both audience and critics alike. Because it's fucking good! And it's not just because motion in anime makes good anime. It's what they do with the motion. It's what they do with the detail. It's what they do to let you know that they put their heart and soul and love into this. Just so they can share that with you. This is something that an artist made so that you can experience what they wanted to experience. And that's what Spirited Away is. It's a joyful, fun adventure. It's a nice 2-hour adventure that didn't feel like 2 hours. There was no point where I looked at the clock thinking, you know, how much longer is this? Or not even to say, damn, it's only been blah, blah, blah. Everything feels like it's the appropriate amount of time, and you feel engrossed in every detail on the screen. And going through the entire library of Ghibli, going through the entire library of anime right now, like we said with Lupin the Third, it's a nice reminder of what anime can be, of what you love about anime. Like when you go through Animisery, like I said last time, or, you know, seasonal trash, and you're like, this is miserable. I hate anime. Why am I even watching this? But you come back to something like Spirited Away, and you say, this is it. This is why. This is what we can do. And instantly, I gave this a 9.5 out of 10, but I was holding out because, as I like to do, I want to give it a couple days of simmer before I give it a 10 out of 10 because I'm a stickler like that. But, yeah, I can't find anything wrong with this. I give this a 10 out of 10 and a wholehearted recommendation.
Dang, a Brad 10 out of 10 is like a Matt 13 out of 10. Because I give things 10 out of 10s too much.
Yeah, although you did say that because you gave this a 10 out of 10, you had to drop one by a point.
Yeah, I really did. After I finished it, I looked at my 10s out of 10s, and a certain one got demoted to a 9. I said, I cannot have you congregating with these other 10s out of 10s. You are the odd man out. But I don't want to say it because I feel like somebody might get mad. They'll be like, you can't take that back.
Be like, I don't want you mingling with my new guest. You'll embarrass me.
Yeah, but I mean, stellar film. This is going to be, I feel like these 2 months are going to be great months. Although I think they both have their problems because we're still doing seasonal stuff.
Yeah.
But I think this only makes me appreciate this film more is that I'm going through the seasonal slog and I'm saying, I'm pulling out my old weathered photograph of Miyazaki and I'm hugging it and saying, you're worth fighting for. As I go through another, Uba, you fell and touched my boobies. Take responsibility. Gomenasai. Oh, Gomenasai, little sister.
Or like, there's an aesthetic to my revenge. And you just ball up into a ball up from cringe.
Yeah, I still think about that. Just there's an aesthetic to my revenge. I'm just, what did he mean by that?
Every time I think about that, my lips curl.
But this movie was fantastic. I cannot praise it enough to the point of you, dear listener, becoming exhausted with me. But it's a really fantastic film. I think you should go check it out. What did I give Lupin? A 9?
I think so.
Yeah, go check out both of those. They're good, but Spirited Away first.
This podcast, sponsored by VPN. Get a VPN so you can cross the ocean and watch films that normally you wouldn't be allowed to watch.
Dude, British Netflix is wild.
Yeah.
They got Shrek. They got all kinds of stuff.
They got a lot of cartoons singing happy birthday to you.
Yeah.
But that has been Spirited Away, and we have been the Otaku Melancholy Podcast. We've been your hosts,
Matt
and Brad. Catch us every Tuesday and every provisional Friday on our website at otakumelancholy.com. where you can find our previous episodes, as well as our series Animisery, Attack on Titan, Satoshi Kon Quest, Journey Monogatari, which, you know, is taking a little trip in the motel just for a couple nights.
A couple of nights? It's been like several months.
Yeah. And you can also find our other stuff, like
also,
our social
also,
media.
Also.
like our Facebook, also Twitter, also Instagram, also Discord.
Also. Speaking of people who probably said also a lot, today's quote comes from Thomas Paine.
Thomas Paine.
Not to be his confused with his evil rival, Jeffrey Enjoyment. Those who expect to reap the blessings of anime must undergo the fatigue of supporting it. True words have never been spoken. There is a fatigue to my watching.
Yeah.
That's show. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Kabate.